podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Forged in the fires of undersoil heating. Stronger than the steel of a stadium roof. Their name is uttered in anguish and ecstasy.
It's all about the football gods. All they can do is hope they're smiling on them.
Never seen, never heard, but with ultimate power, these are the football gods.
Hello, you're listening to Football Gods with me, Tim Spears.
And me, Kate Mason. This week, we are joined by England international cricketer Mark Wood, fresh off the back of the India tour. He is a man you can experience in many media. He's also the co-host of the podcast Middle Please Umpire. He's got an award-winning book with Vatishan Ehantharajah called The Wood Life, a not so helpful how-to guide on surviving cricket life and everything in between. You could tell that this guy is a polymath, Tim.
He's also just a legend and a nice guy, right? This guy's won like the Ashes, won like two World Cups. He's like one of the best bowlers in the world. Just like a normal guy, just chatting about football, down to earth. He's like, he knows where his roots are. He knows what he likes about his football. And yeah, we had a nice chat and a bit of a laugh, basically. I loved it.
It's also clear that he spent a lot of time thinking about who would take penalties from the England cricket team if they had to.
Yeah, there's massive crossover between football and cricket. I love hearing about that kind of stuff, like who supports what team, what would they do if they played for the other sport and all that stuff. And also the most interesting thing about Mark that I found out in the last hour is in terms of who he supports, because it's such an unusual story. You know, he's the complete opposite of a glory hunter, right?
He certainly is. And you're going to find out any moment now who that is. Here is Mark Wood, football god. Mark, thank you so much for joining us for this. Now, clearly cricket, we would say, is your main sport. But I feel like people who've seen you celebrate and sometimes try and get people out using your feet might suspect that you have a bit of footballing heritage back there, not just in terms of being a big fan of a football club. So take us through it. What's your football background?
Well, I grew up in Ashington, which is a mining town right up in the northeast, famous for Bobby Charlton, Jackie Milburn. We've managed a couple of cricketers, myself and Stephen Harmison. But from a football point of view, Ashington was the team that I first, you know, that was round the corner. I could go and watch them at Portland Park. And as I grew up, I played for a local side and then managed to get myself on Newcastle United's academy for a year when I was a young footballer. I was real small. I didn't have a gross felt. I was about 15, 16, so I was tiny. Got released quite young, stayed in football. So in the winter, I would play football and in the summer, I'd play cricket. And if I was in a cup final or anything, the cricket was on, I'd be like, look, I kind of play cricket. The football takes further. And I always was football first, to be honest. And cricket was sort of like a hobby that I would just do in the summer. It was nice weather. I lived just around the corner, so it was dead easy. The team I supported growing up was AFC Wimbledon. So all my family are big Newcastle fans. My best mate is a Sunderland fan. So I sort of got the best of both worlds in the Northeast, where I could sort of not have any sort of arguments or no loyalties or anything like that. Yeah, and Wimbledon was my team. As I grew up, I used to collect the Premier League sticker books. And my favourite colour was blue. And first of all, I must have been about 4 or 5 years old. So my favourite colour was blue. And I remember I got a Wimbledon shiny. And I thought, I love the colours in that team. And what really sold, I mean, I could have supported Chelsea, Everton, Leicester, who I was around at the time. But what really sold us for us is one of the players in the Wimbledon team. I thought, that looks like my dad. That had a big moustache. My dad had a moustache at the time. I thought, that's the team for me.
Which player was that? Sorry, Mark.
I think it was Hans Segers, I think, at the time. I think he had the moustache. It was either him or Gary Blissett had a big tash like my dad as well. So I think a couple of them resembled my dad, and I was like, well, I've got to support them then. And that was the tea.
That's very funny. Surely loads of people had moustache. I feel like the moustache was big at that time. You must have had quite a few teams to pick.
Exactly. Yeah, I was right in the trend, but not many played for the Blues team, you know what I mean? So I had to just pick one from the Blues. I had the shiny, and I think the crazy gang seemed to they fit me well, they were fun, and just give it a go, and that sort of suited me. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to watch AFC Wimbledon live in a few years. Obviously, it's a big trip from the northeast. It used to be great when they used to be in the Premier League, because I could go to Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough. I went to all the northern games, and got some funny looks in the stands when we were obviously playing Newcastle. Then I'd be in the wind and I'd be shouting, "How are lads?" And they'd be like, who are you supporting here? I'm one of you. I've got my Wimbledon shirt on, Dean Wordsworth on the back. That was me tea.
This is seriously wacky stuff, to be honest. Like, I'm just blown away by the idea of you just going down this route from so far away.
But my parents never pushed us or anything. They never pushed us to say, "Oh, support Newcastle," or, you know, my best friend, I went to watch Sunderland games with him for a couple of years. And to be honest, they were great with us. Like, when I was on the academy at Newcastle as a young footballer, I didn't have a great time with things. I didn't enjoy that much. But then, like, Wimbledon, from that day, they were a smaller club. Now, they would send us things every birthday. They would, like, make a fuss of us whenever I went to the games and things like that. So, actually, I love that sort of family atmosphere of the club.
I think it's quite a cool thing that you're a Wimbledon fan, especially with them being a League Two club. It clearly reflects your personality as a loyal man who stuck with them through thick and thin. But when you're a kid in the playground, are you just known as, like, the weird Wimbledon fan?
And the last pick, who wins it? He's got his Wimbledon strip on. Let's get the lad with the Shearer on the back. He must be a good player. But when I play cricket, sometimes now when the ball sort of drops to the side of the stumps, if it's on my right foot, I'll shout Shearer. If it's on my left foot, I'll shout Ginola or Ketsbaya or something like that. All those 90s footballers I grew up watching. And, like, of course I do, obviously, like Newcastle, my family, I say my family support them. So it's great. I sort of have a slight connection with them. But I thought if the ball dropped my right foot and I shouted F and a Kugu, I'm not sure that would have had the same sort of, they would have gotten the same sort of reaction. So I chose the right options there. But I think in the playground and stuff, it was nice. I've always been someone that likes to have something different. So my strip was different. Like, I remember I had a Rodar JC strip from Holland that my uncle had brought back one year. So I always liked having something different that nobody else had. Everyone had the Shearer top. Everybody had a, you know, Les Ferdinand or whatever. So no one had the Wimbledon strip. And I quite like that. Even when it was snowing, I'd be out in the back garden on Christmas Day in my full Wimbledon kit. So it was meant to be.
So you were a hipster football fan, basically, before it was invented.
Yeah, and I've still got it. I've got the classic strip. I mean, you definitely kind of categorise as a glory hunter, can you? That's something I'm definitely not. So, I think, I mean, nowadays, if I get to go to any of the games, it's definitely sort of Newcastle matches. It's literally the closest game I get to go and get to see some good players and stuff. So that's the closest ones I go to now. Of course, I'd love to go back to Wimbledon. When we won the Ashes in 2015, they very kindly invited me along. I remember I was about to go on the, introduce me to the fans, and they were going to say, "Right, Mark, just, you know, wave to the fans and you can say hello." I thought, "Wow, this is amazing. I'm on the pitch. I can't believe I'm here at Wimbledon." And as I get on the pitch, the guy grabs the mic and he's like, "Any words for the fans, Mark?" And I was like, it's totally like on the spot. Didn't know what to say. I was like, I thought I was just going to wave. So I just went, "I hope for a great game of day I have. Come on, you dons." And luckily the fans went, "Way!" I was like, like, honestly, I was so panicked for like 5 seconds, but they were, again, every time I've gone, they've made a big fuss of us and been great. So a really good club.
Because I feel like Wimbledon now have fans from all over the world as a result of their, you know, well-documented struggle to get their ground back, get their club back. But you were talking about before then. And so we're looking now for your team of the gods. Now, it sounds like it's going to be a Wimbledon side potentially. But who would, for you, what team or what era would represent the gods for you in football?
It'd have to be that sort of 90s era. That's the one that I grew up playing in. I'm obviously going to pick Wimbledon as my team. That's it, who my team is. It's AFC Wimbledon. Everyone keeps asking me, what about MK Dons? I'm like, no, don't swear at me. It's not them. It's AFC Wimbledon. That's my team. So AFC Wimbledon would be the team of the gods. I could still rattle off that team now. I reckon Sullivan, Cunningham, Perry Blackwell, Kimball, Leonardson, Ardley, Robbie Earl, Vinnie Jones, Efna Kuku, Marcus Keel. That's me team. Bang.
Amazing.
Locked it in straight away. Just have fun, play hard, but play fair, and have a good time whilst doing it. And that's a bit like the way our England cricket team sort of going about things at the minute, is have a good go when we're on the field, but, you know, make memories, have fun, and be all positive. So that team will do for me.
Vinnie Jones is a name that really sticks out. What's it like having one of your favourite players go on to have like a Hollywood film career? Like, the equivalent for me would be like Steve Ball just being a regular in Coronation Street. It'd be really
really strange. But he's a pretty good actor, right? I saw him in The Gentleman on Netflix recently. He's like, he's really good.
I've watched that as well. We watched that out in India together. All the lads go around. And, you know, I try not to delve into it too deep. But as soon as he comes on, I'm like, so I mean, boys, this, you know what I mean? This is all the lads. So I look out for things that he's in. Obviously, he tweeted me once and I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, this Vinnie Jones is here. I think we used to play football in the England warm-ups. And sometimes we used to video the games. It's been bad now because obviously people getting injured and stuff. It went a little bit too far. But one day I put in a crunching tackle and it was like videoed. And they were like, oh, is this Vinnie Jones-esque or something like that? And he tweeted back and I was like, oh my God, he thinks I'm a player. He thinks I'm a player. Vinnie Jones thinks I'm a player. I'm about to get him in that side. But yeah, delighted. Anything that he's in is pretty special. Like, I always try and watch it.
That is so cute. Are you the best footballer in the England team?
No, I reckon if I was asked, if I was pushed, I'd say probably Jos Buttler was the best.
Huh.
Chris Wokes is a lovely footballer, but never tries because he's a fast baller. He looks after his body. You have to get Wokes. He's more of like a Rolls Royce, but you have to get him with a second gear. Never gets out of second gear. The one that loves it the most is probably Morinelli. But I had to trust someone with a penalty because he's so calm and like loves his football that much. He'd be my man. Morinelli would be me penalty taker.
Brilliant.
When Wimbledon went down to like the ninth tier, you know, as a Phoenix, as a new club, did you ever think, I don't know how far you were into your cricket career at that point, but did you ever think, yeah, I could give it a go, fancy a trial?
No. I was delighted when Neil Hardy, because he was one of my favourite players, so I was delighted when he was the manager. So I loved it when he was around. But I sort of tried to think, when I was about 16, I played like sort of semi-pro team West Allotment. I trialled with them for a little bit. Then when the cricket took over, especially being a fast bowler and the amount of injuries I've had, I thought this is definitely not going to work for me. I was a centre midfield player. I was nice on the ball, liked to pass it and stuff, and try to use both feet. So that's the kind of player I was, but I'm not the best in the team. I would say Joss, sort of in that number 10 role, he'd be my star player. If I had to push anyone for a trial, it would be Joss.
You mentioned Ashington earlier with this thing, like incredible sporting pedigree. Off the top of my head, the town's only got a population of 27,800. So what is it? but honestly, like what is it about that place? Is it amazing facilities? Do they have great grass, pure air? What's going on there?
Something in the water. The sun always shines. And I think it's just, it's a place. It's a very working class area. And I think sport gives people and brings them together as a community, gives you something to hope for. It's like a dream to get in the sort of sport world. And I think in an area where even if you play well at local football, you can be sort of somebody like, oh, you get respect and stuff like that. So sport, you know, I think it probably dates back to the mining days where after you finish work, different mining cliques would create pub teams and sports areas and social gatherings and things like that. And sport was a huge part of the area. So I think that's just where it comes from, and it's always sort of stuck that, you know, the values of working hard and you get nothing that's given to you and you have to almost prove yourself. So I think that's sort of still around now. Well, hopefully it is.
Good stuff. Right, Mark, you are our football god. I hope you're going to take this very seriously. I think you are going to. What would be your first godly act upon being anointed our football god?
Right, so no limitations, right? So I'm going to keep things relatively simple. I'm going to go on for each team can only have two strips, home and away.
Nice.
Every player has to wear black boots. You cannot wear coloured boots. It's got to be black. They've got to be polished before the game and cleaned. Knee mud, otherwise you can't get on the field. It's £20 to get in. £5 if you come after half time. You get a free match programme and a scarf or a rattle, depending on how you want to create the atmosphere. I would say that it's free transport to and from the game.
Nice.
With a bus put on. And you get a free pint piece at the match. That's Viking. Yeah, that's my first godly act. That's the way it's got to be for every team. I've delved back into my Ashton roots a little bit there, where I used to stand on the terrace where sometimes if me mum and dad didn't give us enough pocket money, I had to say, right, I've got to go in at half time where it's half the price. So I'd gone in after half time, kept me rattle on the stands. I used to have that old fashioned rattle and they had a drum at Ashton and stuff like that. So that's where that's brought us back there. I've kind of gone into my sort of childhood memories and saying, look, my first godly act. I want things nice and simple, two strips. There's so many strips nowadays, I can't keep up. I just want two honest strips, black boots.
But the third strips are quite often the like creative fun ones. Maybe you should take out the normal away strips and make the third strips the second strips.
Yes, if you want to do that, I'm open to that. Yeah, I'm fine with that as well.
And the black boots is just, you just think it's too fancy.
I think my favourite players at the time all wore sort of like them black boots. And the fact that when I was growing up, I mean, I remember my favourite ever pair of boots I got them for Christmas once was a pair of A-lines. Again, there might be a bit of a theme here that nobody else had these type of boots. They were kangaroo leather. And I used to soak them and get them nice and soft. And the only player that used to wear them was Zola. So they were A-line boots from and they were Italy. And they were the boots I used to wear. I used to have Moldies and then Studs. And the fact that they were black boots, I used to think, right, at that time I'm a midfield player, wear black boots, no thrills, pass the ball, get it out, be tenacious and tackle. So that was, I think every player should be like that then. That's it. If it's not good enough for me, everyone's got to be like that.
I'm going to possibly out myself as an absolute dickhead here, but...
First time for everything.
Kangaroo leather? Kangaroo leather. Made of kangaroo.
I'm sure. I don't know. No idea. But that was the... I remember the... That's how they felt so soft.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought Tim was going to step in here and be like, yeah, Mason, all football boots are made of kangaroo leather, you idiot.
No idea.
No? All right, fine.
I think that's what made me think subconsciously that's how my touch is so good because they're,
yeah, I bet,
extra soft.
Yeah, that does sound beautiful. Okay, I think we've got a fairly clear blueprint for how things are going to go down at the game. Who is going to be footballing perfection then for you?
Well, the player, I know he didn't feature in my team that I picked there, but the player that I probably most looked up to growing up was probably Scholes. You know, would ping the ball 50 yards on a 5p piece. He was tenacious. And the fact that, like, we've got some fiery gingers in the cricket team, Stokes and Bairstow, and I get on well with them too. So I feel like me and Scholes in the midfield could, you know, we could dovetail really well. And I think the fact that you listen to interviews, like, obviously Zidane, I'd love to have him, but listen to likes of Zidane and Xavi and people like that, and they all say that Scholes was one of the best that they came up against. And, you know, he could get the odd goal, he could get stuck in. He had that little bit of maverick about him as well, like, where you weren't quite sure if he was going to jump into a tackle or something like that. So, yeah, I used to like Scholes, so he'd be me, godly player.
Yeah, people in the game always speak so glowingly.
Yeah, he's the player's player, isn't he?
It's a good pick, definitely. Have you met him?
I've seen him. So apparently, him and Gary Neville and things come to the cricket at Old Trafford. The big cricket fans. I think Phil Neville was an excellent cricket player, from what I've heard. He could have gone one way or the other. Meet some footballers. I mean, Sean Longstaff. He's big on his cricket. I've seen him a few times. From obviously Newcastle. And Rob Elliott used to play for Asherton, believe it or not. So I don't know if I'm going to get Rob in trouble here, but when he was still on the books at Newcastle, he'd play the odd game for Asherton Cricket Club in the summer.
Brilliant.
So he would come to the cricket club. So, yeah, I mean, there's a few footballers who you come across. I mean, I did a thing with Rio Ferdinand and he didn't have a clue about cricket. So he, obviously, there's a lot who don't, but there's a few who do love it. And it's nice when they do, because when they ask me questions, I don't feel bad asking them the football questions back, not looking like a bit like a school kid and a bit of a badger. Oh, what happens when you do this? And who says that? And yeah, so it's good when they know a bit about cricket and then I can get a bit back.
It's all been nice stuff so far, Mark, but we're gonna take it down a notch now and ask you, if you can, which player would you condemn to hell?
I remember there was a guy called, was he called Muller? Got the penalty in Euro 96?
Yeah, Andy Muller, I think. Was it Andy? Andreas? Yeah.
Whoever he was, he scored the penalty to knock England out the semi-final, and then he did this like sort of strutting peacock celebration. And I was on his... six at the time, so it was one of my first sort of introductions to football when I first started watching it, and I've never ever forgiven him since. I thought, biggest rivals in football, and he strutted off like a peacock in the corner, not happy, not having him. He can go to hell for that.
Yeah, he sort of put his hands by his waist and was sort of like, oh, look at me, kind of thing. Like,
yeah, and strutted off into the corner. I mean, I didn't like Suarez for a bit either, and I think like the fact that he's like on the edge all the time, like the biting incidents, the handballs, the running around and chasing referees and pleading the like stuff out. But I like players that play hard but fair, and he irritated. In fact, probably was so good as well that he always used to score as well, didn't he? You'd be like, oh, this guy, I hope a defender that he gets his, you know, what's coming to him. Yeah, but he would always seem to then get a hat-trick or something like that. So he would be in there. But I think Muller would be me number one for the way that ruined my childhood that day. Tears that night, England knocked out. and he'd think of him strutting into the corner, and he'd be my number one.
So if he'd have just scored the penalty and then just sort of shook hands with his teammates, you know, 1950s style, congratulations, that wouldn't have been as bad. It was the arrogance.
Wouldn't have been as bad, yeah. He tipped over the scales when he did the peacock celebration.
Is it showboating for you generally?
I think if I was good enough to showboat, then maybe I would accept it. But the fact that I'm not, I've blagged it for a few years with England now. No one's took any notice. I haven't got that in me. I can't afford to do that. So it probably just boils down to just more, I'd like to play hard, but fair, and sometimes the showboating, the arrogance or the cockiness can tip in, and certainly again reminds us of growing up, whereas if you had any sort of that at Asherton growing up, people would knock you down a peg or two pretty quick. So I guess some of it is good. You want characters, don't you? You don't want everybody to be a robot, and you want to have characters with a bit of flair and stuff like that. But I guess it's where it teeters on the line if it goes too far, really.
I can see that. Okay, so I mean, that might have been a football moment you wanted to wipe from history, but we're coming up to that one next. So what are you wiping out?
I'm wiping out Wimbledon 2, Tottenham 6. First game, I went to Selhurst Park, went down 95 train rides, day and night, starving, tired, left at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Wimbledon looked after me brilliant, said I could be the mascot next time I go down. Travelled so far, lovely day. Wimbledon scored first early on. I think it was a guy called maybe Jupp had scored early on. And then Jürgen Klinsmann had scored four goals. And Wimbledon got beat 6-2. And that is the day. And then I had to get back on the train, travel all the way back to the northeast. Great that the club looked after me. Great sort of outing that I got to go to Wimbledon. But they got absolutely thrashed. And the one day I didn't want them to get thrashed, that is the day I'm wiping out from football history.
But you're getting to watch one of the greatest individual football performances, you know, not ever, maybe, but a fantastic individual football performance.
I can appreciate it now and say, look, at fantastic Evie, you know, he played brilliant, Klinsmann. But as a sort of 7 or 8 year old, I could not see past this bloke who picked on my team deliberately and bullied them into submission. And we lost the game pretty heavy. I mean, you've flooded all these memories back now. I mean, if I don't cry in the next 5 seconds, I've done incredibly well. Klinsmann, cannot believe it.
Sorry, Woody.
There's a lot of Wimbledon defeats coming up here in your memories. Have we got some, can we lift the spirits to some really, really good wins?
Andy Roberts is our mate. Andy Roberts is our mate. He hates Palace. Header, last minute, Sheffield Wednesday. I was there in the top with about 100 fans. I didn't forget that one. Don't worry about that.
Do you know, my favourite moment, I think, of the whole season so far in English football was the Wimbledon beating MK Dons a few weeks ago.
I don't know if I can remember it. I think the guy left foot, he tapped it in the crowd went wild. I can't really remember it, but yeah, it was pretty good.
I love the level of pettiness in the rivalry. I mean, it's completely justified, of course, but how they don't like mention each other's names on match days and stuff like that. And it's like the home team, the away team. It's amazing.
I absolutely love it. Class. Not the real Dons, are they? Try and say they're the real Dons. Not real Dons.
Oh, yeah.
They should just be Milton Keynes.
Yeah, of course. Because that's a rivalry that goes so much deeper than geography or, you know, some kind of match where they've beaten each other. Like, that's, you stole something from us.
No one can really understand, like, moving a club 70-odd miles is a big deal. Like, I think of where I live now, in Newcastle, moving, like, 70-odd miles, it's miles away for people to, especially if you're out in London and then you've got to go, it's a long way away and it's just a completely different feel, isn't it? It's not your team.
Right, we've got rid of a 6-2 home defeat to Spurs, and rightly so. But if you could banish one thing from football, Mark, what would it be? What do you hate about football?
I would pick something to do with the referee. I'm not going to pick VAR. I'm not going to say that, but I would pick with more bookings for the way that they speak to the refs. Gathering around the refs, answering back, like contesting every decision. I would be more strict with that yellow card. I look at like things like rugby, boxing, which are two really physical, like tough blokes, massive. They've all got like massive respect for the refs. And sometimes I think in football, like when they're hounding the referee or they're criticised all the time, like everyone makes mistakes. Like it's frustrating even in cricket when the umpire makes a mistake and you're the guy playing. But I think the level of respect sometimes, I will try and cut that back and say, right, you know, things like diving. I just think it's a respect thing. I think that's something I'll cut back on. It's like, right, this season, if there's any answering back or if it goes too far, it's an automatic yellow. Ultimately, try and bring a bit of respect back. I would even maybe even release audio. They do that in rugby, don't they, where the refs wear and you can hear their decision and sometimes what the players say back. That might be a great eye-opener to people at home if you could listen to what, I mean, it might not be great, but like, if you could listen to what they're saying. I keep thinking about the rugby and boxing. I mean, I love all sports. I just think the amount of like respect they've got for the ref and the way the games are run and stuff. I would love football to maybe not get to that extreme because I don't think that would be, you could do that, but get to that certain level.
I mean, they tried a few years ago by saying only the captains could speak to the ref, which was pretty short-lived, I think. It just feels like you say, lack of respect, and referees are sort of seen as the enemy, and players just constantly try and cheat the referee, and like you say, answer back to the referee. And it's a real culture within the game. It looks terrible for like kids growing up in terms of how you treat people. It's terrible.
That's it, and I think it's so different. Obviously, it's hard to compare the two, but even like you look at like Sunday morning, if I'm walking across the field, yes, Sunday morning. People speak the refs different in local leagues than they do in other sports as well, because I think they see it on the telly, kids and stuff like that. And it's that sort of conning where I think that makes the refereeing inconsistent, because one week there's a guy who you think he's broken his leg, he's running around the floor and he's back up within a second. The next week someone generally is injured, that's surrounding the ref saying, why haven't you stopped the game? Look how hurt he is. I think that's just got to be... The thing that I would change is maybe I'm not totally against that audio thing. I think that would be good, just because then fans at home could really see, look, and then the players might take a step out and say, well, we can't say everything because people at home are going to hear this. And then that might be a bit more of a respect thing there.
You mentioned rugby and boxing. What about in cricket? It feels like you have sort of like more rapport with the umpires.
We do. I mean, you know, there's times where you can be incredibly frustrated with decisions and things like that, but there is stump makes. So sometimes they can pick up audio, and there's things in cricket where even if you throw your hands up and things out when you give a bad decision, I mean, umpires are, you know, quite down to earth and they let you get away with stuff, but they can even, you know, give you points for that, and if you collect a certain amount of points, you then get banned for a game. I don't know if that would work in football, but in cricket, I think the technology definitely has helped it. I'm not sure it obviously has in football, but the Hawkeye and the LBW review system has helped our game a lot, which takes some of the pressure off the umpires, which it hasn't probably done in football. But I just think the respect thing, it's just the way that, you know, maybe the talk, the constant like sort of berating the ref all the time in football, it's something that sort of, I don't know, it just bothers us a little bit. I'm not saying that you have to agree with every decision. You have to be nicer than nice because, you know, the tensions are high. It's, you know, there's loads of money on the line, big decisions. And I get that people be frustrated, but maybe like it's just the amount of inconsistency and then the pressure that the refs are under. I think I will try and change that a little bit.
In the India tour, there was a lot of chat about, is DRS like dodgy or all this stuff? People, and especially fans online, like people are always going to pick apart everything because any sport, anything that's got lots and lots of fans interested in it. So I don't know if there's a way of changing that. I guess you were saying that if referees, in this case in football, are kind of strong and are treated well by the people around them, then that's half part of the battle.
I think they have to all be on the same page, don't they? It kind of be like where one falters from the line. If it's before the season and they say, right, if anybody swears at the ref, or maybe not a swear word, but swears deliberately at the ref, then right, automatic yellow, and you stick by it. Like that is what it's doing. Or if the audio and you can hear what players are saying, or the captain thing, I'm not sure if, as I said, yeah, people listen to podcasts are probably thinking, well, he hasn't got a clue what he's talking about, or it's just not doable. Like it probably isn't, but it's just something that I would like to see happen. I'm not sure you could actually put it in place, but I think from an audio point of view or something like that, I just think it would maybe give people a great insight at home, and also try and get a bit of power and respect back for the ref.
Plus, let's not forget here, Woody, you are God in this scenario. Mm. So
let's not forget that.
That is true. So, you know, if you didn't want to watch my football, then turn it off. You know what I mean? Watch something else.
Now, question seven is something we know that you went into in a slightly creative way. I think, I don't know what the outcome's been. It's about the football, the food of the gods for you. So it's, you know, what you want to eat, what God is bringing you.
Well, I had a massive mind. Yeah, I had a mind blank at this point when you sent it. Because I was thinking, food of the gods, oh, this must be like some sort of, it's got a hidden meaning. Food of the gods is like divine. So what divine, am I thinking like a through pass with like a little bit of side swerve on it that cuts between the fullback and the centre half? That would be the food of the gods because it's divine.
That was a great answer.
Oh, wow.
Like, I mean, I'm big into like my history and stuff, right? So it's almost like had that Greek mythology, food of the gods, like
nice.
Zeus and all powerful, like Roberto Carlos free kick, the food of the gods, because it's like he hits it a million mile an hour, like Zeus in it. And I've obviously clearly overthought it a lot.
Yeah, but like most people just say a burger or something, you know.
So the food of the gods, I'd gone with what I would like before the game. So I'd gone with something like a pasta dish, a carbonara, something like that. Something with plenty of energy, a bit of protein, loads of carbs, tasty. Not too close to kickoff, though. I wouldn't want that the old stitch. But if I'm feeling, you know, a bit Mediterranean, a bit Italian with my airlines on, I might have a bit of Parmesan on top, you know, if I'm feeling a bit more, you know, Asherton, might just be a bit of a stotty to dip in to me pasta, mop up the sauce. So that would be me food of the gods just for the game. Plenty of energy to let us, you know, run around the field with poor scores.
I'm concerned about the carbonara. Isn't that a bit creamy for a pre-match meal?
Oh, wait, look, I can mix it up. The other day I might have a bit of tomato-based one. Next day, just a bit of olive oil. I don't want to just stay still. I want to mix it up, a bit of flavour.
Understood. And what did you say was going to clean it up? Or you were going to use to a bit of...
A stotty.
What's a stotty?
Like a big bap. So the stotties are big baps.
Okay, cool.
I tell you what I would have, because I'm a proper home bird. I love, like, my mother's homemade broth with, like, thick gammon in there. And then you dip the stotty in. That would be me pre-match football of the gods as well. I'd have that right in there. That'd be like your starter.
So we know what you're going to be eating, but who are you going to be watching your match with, Mark? Who would you love to watch a game with?
I think the obvious answer would be with my dad, you know, someone who we'd close with, and he was the one that got us into sport in general, football and cricket. Love talking about sport in general with my dad, so he would be an obvious choice. Another choice could be my best friend, the Sunderland fan. I went to watch the Sunderland games with him, and the most diehard, I mean, literally if they lost, it like affected his weekend. I remember when Sunderland beat Chelsea, I didn't go, but he rang us after crying his eyes out in tears because Nedeman knew I had scored the winner at Chelsea and he'd never been as happy in his life. And he says he looked at us. I was like, what do you mean? He says, at the end of the game, they came over and clapped, and I took my shirt off and I held it up, and on the back it had a new iron. I had tears in my eyes, and he pointed and clapped it at just me. And I was like, there's no bloke, I think, can love football this much, where we would travel to every game, home and away. I had nicknames for people like Tommy Three Dinners, who apparently got on the Sunderland bus, who had three dinners at a time. So I think that people like that would be gold dust to grant it. The other one, I mean, if I could pick someone out of me circles, I'd love to gamble for someone like Mourinho, just to see how his brain ticks and tactically, and, you know, he doesn't hold back either, does he? So he wouldn't exactly, like, you know, cream over the cracks, or, like, you know what I mean? He would tell you exactly what he thinks, and I'd love to even just be in his presence, because there's some great stories there, you know, how he looks after his players and how respectful he is, but also he's had some, like, great bust-ups, and he sees a player or not. I'd love to speak with him. I mean, Gareth Southgate came into the just before the World Cup at home in 2019, he came into our camp and did a chat with us. I remember he put on the screen England, the score a goal, I think it's against, I want to say Wales, was that in the Euros or the World Cup? Daniel Sturridge scored later on.
Yeah, it was Wales, yeah.
Anyway, he put up like a bird's eye view, which I'd never seen before. Like, it must have been almost like a drone. And he says the old England would have gotten the ball at the back and lumped it forward at the centre forward, hoping for a knockdown, try and score a lucky goal. He says, and if you look, we're not panicking. And he played this passage of play for what must have been about 5 or 6 minutes, where England keep the ball and they're shifting it across the back. And he says, a lot of people would say, you know, why aren't you pumping it forward? This is boring. You're passing it across the back. But he says, look, we're shifting the Welsh players here. He's moving there. then one drops out of the space, we go bang, 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 the ball gets forward to Sturridge and we score. And all of us were like, wow, like, you can't believe, I mean, even as like sport, like professional sports and ourselves, we were still like, oh my God, that was amazing. Like the way he talked through it and stuff like that. And I imagine like being next to Mourinho or like even Gareth Southgate or someone like that, it must be great to talk about football with if you're watching a match and listen to where, how players are personality wise and why they're moving in certain ways and tactically why they've done that. And yeah, it was fascinating. Absolutely loved it.
Feels like the Gareth Southgate kind of kinder, more like treating players as whole people approach.
Yeah, he was amazing bloke, lovely guy. And even when we watch the football now, the internationals, like if he gets criticised and stuff, I'm like, I mean, just when you know him, like I don't know him at all. I imagine if you're a player and you know him, you want to play for him. He came across so well. He spoke so well. He was such respectful and, you know, gave everybody his time. I thought he was really great, actually, really nice guy.
Loves his cricket as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, loves his cricket, yeah. Which was nice as well. I told him before, like, he could ask me some cricket questions and I could badger him back about football, which is quite nice. So I didn't feel bad that I was just hammering him with football crediting. So when he asked me about fastball and a little bit, I was like, yeah, yeah, but what about such and such? Yeah, yeah, that, yeah, just let it go. Anyway, Harry Kane's first touch, tell us about it.
It feels as well like the changes that we've seen in the England men's football team are maybe similar to how the culture has changed in the England cricket team as well. Obviously, you guys are just off the back of a pretty big loss in India when we're talking to you now. Do you feel like that's how you're experiencing it as well, that the guys that are looking after you in England cricket are taking care of the whole person, and like, you know, when there's a win and a loss, it's kind of pretty similar in terms of the approach?
Yep, and I think the guys in the football team, they seem like it's an England football team, not loads of lads coming together from different parts. Like, it seems like that is the team, and that's, I feel like that's what the cricket feels like as well. Like, yes, we all come from different counties, and you know, I come from Durham, sort of Stokesy, but then Joe Root from Yorkshire, and people like that. But when we're together, it very much feels like the England team, not just like sporadic groups and trying to. And I think the way that they are media wise and with the fans, the England football team, and I'm sure that's probably been a part of that. The cricket has learned from that. You know, our guys go over to St George's Park and they do little bits there, or our management and backroom staff. So I'm sure that everyone is sort of dipping into each other, what's working well and what's, you know, not. And I just think it does feel very personal and like you can get along with the England football team at the minute. And I hope that, you know, the cricket's the same, that you can tell that results don't always go our way, but we certainly give it everything we've got and we try and play the game the right way.
Nice. We're coming on to music. What is the football song you would like to hear if you're at your game as a football god?
Well, I tend to like individual player songs just because it reminds us of, obviously, the Barmy Army with England, with the cricket team. Like, each player has a song and, you know, they sing it while we're playing, or if you get a wicket, or if the lads get runs. So, I mean, my favourite one, they're singing every morning in the cricket, is Jerusalem. So every morning they'll stand up and they'll sing Jerusalem. And that's great with a trumpet there. And that's awesome to hear, especially when you're on the field. And I mean, the last game we lost at Dharmashala, but it's at the foot of the Himalayas. So I was sort of feeling the fine leg, and you could look up and you could see the Himalayas and they're singing Jerusalem behind you. I was like, how awesome is this? Like, this is what, it doesn't like literally get any better than this. I mean, if you ask me for a specific football song, the Colaccini one always used to make me laugh when, they used to say that David Luiz was just a rubbish Colaccini. Maybe not that word is what the one they used, but that always used to make me laugh, or Sideshow Bob and stuff like that. So, and they used to sing the Colaccini that I Want Curly Hair Too, and the Barmy Army sing that I Want Ginger Hair Too, the Johnny Bairstow. So that's always like been a nice link. But yeah, any song with, I mean, the lads still play in the dressing room. It comes on the speakers. The World in Motion keeps coming on as part of the, as one of the songs in the dressing room. And Jimmy Anderson always knows every word of that. That's obviously his era. He never misses any lyric out on that song. So if he comes in,
is he doing the rap as well? Is he, Mark?
He gets it all right. I kind of believe really? That he not a bit missed. So if he comes on your podcast, he's the man. When you ask him this question, you gotta have to tee him up and say, "Look, I've said that he gets not one lyric out of place, and he's gonna have to rap it for you."
Impressive.
I feel like this might be a stitch up.
No, honestly, he sings the whole thing. I'm telling you. It doesn't get a bit wrong. for a lad from Burnley who is the grumpiest man alive as well, it's hard to believe that he nails the whole thing. You best try to get him to sing it after he's got a few wickets, like.
Nah.
Okay. Okay, we'll bear that in mind. We'll be waiting.
So you're a big fan of like the terrace humour, I'd say, Mark. Terrace wit. So something a bit smart from the stands.
Yeah, I mean, when we play Australia, for example, as an Englishman, you tend not to get that much smart banter. It's just, would you're a this and that, and that's pretty much it. Or, mate, will you sign this? And you go over to them and they pull it away, or they give you the finger or something like that, which is not really smart. But then I feel like when you listen to our Barmy Army songs or the English banter, the Aussies must get a hammering, but I feel like we've got a bit more wit, whereas they're just literally just humming. So, quite nice. So I think I like the jokey wit side of things more than the just abuse.
Amazing. Right, we've arrived at our final question. Question number 10. And it's a good one. Which game would you like to last forever?
Germany 1, England 5.
Oh, yeah.
Fair play.
And nice. I would like it on repeat. Emil Heskey doing the little DJ, running away, 5. And yeah, Martin Taylor say, Germany 1, England 5. On repeat. The commentary has to go with it. You can't watch it in silence. The commentary has to be on so we can just let everyone know the scoreline. Michael Owen wheeling away with his cartwheels. And yeah, great night to be an England supporter. So 5-1 away in Germany, in that backyard, 5-1.
It doesn't get any better, does it? 5-1 in Germany. It sort of did raise our expectations and hopes that we were the best team in the world at the time. But still, if you encapsulate in that moment, make it last forever.
Man, it was one of them as well. I remember watching it as well. And they scored first. I was like, oh, turn it off. I can't watch them. I can't watch them blaster here. But then, yeah, Gerrard. And I always remember thinking at the time, I've watched it quite a bit. No one's Ferdinand lays it off. That's a great header because every instinct must be normally to go for goal. But he obviously guns, he's what, about 8, 9 yards out? And he goes the other way. And then Gerrard smashes it in. And yeah, of course, me mate Paul Scholes was laying on a couple there. Heskey at the end as well. So that was great. Beckham as captain. The thing I always used to like about Beckham as well is that he'd be the first one to celebrate with the lads that scored. Didn't matter if it was a Liverpool lad or, let's say, a Newcastle lad or whoever. He was always there first to celebrate with them and be in front of the fans. I love that sort of, like, medicine. He's a great team player. I hope that my teammates in the cricket would think, now, you want to be a great team man, you want to help out the team, you want to be the man that everyone, you know, wants to get around. So I was just to love that. And that night, it seemed like everyone was together and they were all celebrating together, and I loved that.
You mentioned the Martin Tyler commentary. Are you a commentary connoisseur?
The one that I could listen to over and over, like every match I would love to hear him, would be Ali McCoist.
Oh, yeah.
When the football's on and like somehow, like if it's a World Cup or a Euros and he does a lot of the game, I'm like, how good is listening to Ali McCoist?
It helps, doesn't it, to think that he's actually nice as well. Like, he's like, comes across as nice, and he is nice. And he just talks about football like he loves it still.
And his laugh and his Scottish twang is class.
It's the accent, isn't it? It carries respect, but also he sounds friendly.
Yeah.
Here's a controversial call. I feel like Scottish, that accent is the best accent for talking about football in the world.
I don't mind it. I mean, obviously you have pundit Souness. I can think of, there's been other Scottish pundits as well. And I think whether you agree with what he says, I mean, I like Souness, but whether you agree with what he says or not, he does, like, the way he speaks as well. Like, I automatically respect him just because of the way he speaks.
It's the weight. He's got a great voice. It's the weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, we know that your favourite cricket presenter, Mark, would be Kate Mason, because of that saying. But who was the best cricket commentator around?
He's retired now, but my favourite was Michael Holden. Just the
voice as well, right?
Jamaican voice, yeah. And he would always put like a negative and a positive together. I don't know how he would do it. He would be like, oh, that's too full. Good swing, though. And he'd be like, oh, Freddie, yeah. So like, you'd have like the two, the good and the bad, married against each other. And just to hear him, like, there's been times where, you know, I've watched games back and I might bowl a good ball and you go, well bowled. And you're like, oh, yes. Made it.
Hey, that was quite a good delivery. That was quite a Michael.
Yeah, it's good. It's good
delivery from you. Are you an accents guy?
I might have watched it a few times, just maybe 300.
The football gods.
Here we go then. Mark Wood's 10 commandments as football gods. His glory team, your glory teammate, is going to be the kind of 90s AFC Wimbledon side. Your first godly act, there's a few components to it. So everyone's got to play in black boots. You've got only two strips. It's £20 to get in. There's free transport. You're looking after everybody. Football perfection is Paul Scholes. And we're damning Andreas Müller to hell, partly for the penalty, partly for the strut. And wiping from history, Wimbledon 2, Tottenham 6, which is a really disappointing call.
Banishing from football is going to be, well, pretty much the way that players speak to referees. We're going to get Henderson more bookings out for that for sure. Godly food, there were a lot of carbs involved. It was quite a feast, but there's definitely a stotty dipped in your mum's homemade broth. That's definitely in there. Who are you going to watch a game with? You said your dad, your best mate was a Sunderland fan. We had Mourinho, Southgate. Your favourite song was probably just some very, very good witty terrace banter, I think, was how we summed that one up. And the game we're going to last forever is Germany 1, England 5. What a game.
I wouldn't mind you saying that again, actually. What was that last one?
Germany 1, England 5. What a list, Mark Wood.
The Football Gods is a Voice Work Sport production.
Social Podcast Network.